Back together again, you and I wrapping up a busy week on Friday, June the 5th, 2023, right here on Connecticut Today. I delved into just how much it might cost some out-of-towners to go to the beach of their choice this summer if they don't live there, and whether or not the state should just regulate beach access like other states do. Quinnipiac University Netter School of Medicine clinical professor of family medicine, Dr. Khurram Ghumman, talked about millions of dollars of medical debt being eliminated for thousands of Connecticut folks. Yeah, right here on Connecticut Today for a Friday, the 5th of June, 2026 at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. The debate raging again in some circles, some people not debating it, saying, hey, whatever, I'll just write the check. Makes a big difference if you're a resident or not for beach access here in the state. Nice story, nice expansive story here by Austin Mermina and Alex Putterman in Hearst a couple of days ago. Connecticut beach towns charge non-residents far more to park. Some people say it's absolutely ridiculous. Other people say, hey, the taxpayers, sorry, that's the way it works. Taxpayers get full access. In nearly every Connecticut town and city along Long Island Sound, it says here, residents pay less, often far less, to park at the public beaches. And people would say, many people would say, well, yeah, shouldn't it be townies first and city people first? I don't know. Westport, if you're a resident of Westport, $60 for the season to park and for beach access. Non-residents, $545. Well, I mean, if you like the beach that nicely, if you like the beach that much, with a very nice beach there along the shore in Westport, pony it up, let's go. The second highest that Hearst posted here, Stamford, $292 for non-residents, $27 for residents. And then Norwalk, West Haven, Stratford, and Milford all charge nothing for city or town residents, $250 for outsiders, $24 in Fairfield, the low, the high, $250. Guilford, up on the other side of New Haven, $35 for town folk, $175 if you're from out of town, and Old Saybrook, my first radio job was in Old Saybrook, $20 if you live in Old Saybrook, $150 if you don't. What do you think about this? Because it's easy to say, well, the city or town residents should get first dibs, and no wonder they're cheaper because of all the taxes they pay. I get that. But does that in any way limit people who may be from the central part of the state who just want to go down and luxuriate for a bit around the water? Does that take away an intrinsic right? I don't know. Tough call. Started off in Stratford. Katie in Stratford. Katie, hi, you're on WICC. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good, Katie. What's on your mind? What do you think on this?
I mean, I grew up in the area. I live in Stratford. I think that until the state takes over the Connecticut shoreline, then no, people can't come to the Stratford beaches if they're not contributing to the maintenance of the beach. Mm-hmm. It's not just like a wild beach. Like, there's bathrooms, there's facilities, there's, you know, they comb the beach, they clean the beach, there's lifeguards. Like, that upkeep costs money, so I'm not going to pay for that for the rest of the state. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. So I think inherently, if it was just a wild open coastline that wasn't maintained by anybody, but, you know, we're maintaining the roads that get there, the parking lot, like, all of that. And I also pay a premium on the home I live in to live in a coastal town. So that's my choice. But until the state takes over the entire coastline and says that it's open to everyone, then I do think it's fair that there are fees for people coming from out of town.
Yeah.
And there are really nice state beaches that are available to people to go to. And the other thing is the volume of people.
The local
town beaches are really small. They can't accommodate endless numbers of people coming to them. You know, we saw that during the pandemic, and it really created a problem down by the beach. So that's just my take on it. And I've also lived on the West Coast, where the beaches are open to everyone, and they're much bigger, and they're all maintained by the state. So it's a totally different, you know, seashore experience.
Excellent, Katie. Excellent call to start us off, Katie. Thank you. Well laid out there. Yeah, in other parts of the country, the beaches are wide freaking open. Doesn't matter because the state runs them. So how about that? I'll have Melissa ask Governor Lamont. He was on the show, I think, earlier today. Was he on today? Yeah, I looked over. We'll have him say, "Hey, Governor, how about a beach militia? We'll take over the beaches." Andrea's with us. Andrea, hi. You're on WICC. How are you?
Good afternoon. This is a great topic. I grew up on the Chesapeake Bay of Virginia Beach, and the beaches down there are free and open. And I relocated to Massachusetts. Everything is locked down like it is here in Connecticut, where I am for this week.
Yeah.
And it's so sky high. It's disgusting, really, though, I have to say. I do agree with Katie. It does take a lot of upkeep. So I could see why one would want to have exclusive rights to the beaches they, you know, contribute local taxes to. But at the same time, I think it's pretty ludicrous. People need to really think about these tax dollars that they pay and where they want them to go. Like Massachusetts, Connecticut is an extremely liberal state. And you guys are going to get taxed to death, just like we are, because that's what the people are voting for.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people get to put all these preposterous, you know, amounts up, and people will pay it. Now, I did think of something, and this is probably the reason I called. I thought it was pretty funny that you said that people were walking in the territory of these exclusive, you know, closed off beach areas, running, maybe going for a walk, maybe just a quick, you know, jaunt, I don't know, what have you. And people were getting pretty upset.
Yeah.
That were local, that these people were encroaching on their territory.
Yeah.
Well, can we juxtapose that with illegal immigration? I think that's hysterical. People don't want outsiders on their beats, but they'll allow illegal immigrants to suck them dry in every other way, shape, and form. So, you know, that makes me laugh, and it's pretty, you get what you get. You want to keep this up? Connecticut, keep voting the way you are.
All right.
Good luck to everybody in Connecticut. Good luck to me in Massachusetts.
Thank you, Andrea. Appreciate that, Andrea. You can tell she's lived around, seen it all, right? Yikes. JR in New Haven, before we do news and traffic and weather together. JR, what's up, sir? How are you?
Yeah, hi, Paul. She kind of beat me to it. I was talking about, you know, we want open borders but closed beaches. You know, beaches for me but not for thee. So.
Okay.
I don't know. It seems to be an odd kind of dynamic going on here, if you ask me.
And JR, and thank you. And let's not kid ourselves that, you know, the exclusivity of these beaches, as opposed to what a couple of our callers had previously said, you know, about growing up where the beaches were all public, like in California. And I'm sure, now listen, not all the beaches in California are public. I mean, you know, you have those stars that live in Malibu. They have, I think they have some private areas, but... Having said that, let's not kid ourselves here. If you look at these towns I'm looking at here in the Post story, Westport, Stamford, Norwalk, West Haven, Stratford, Milford, Fairfield, Guilford, Old Saybrook, you don't think in some way, shape, or form that the fact that these are not completely open public beaches does a big, big, big boost for the property values there and the rentals and the sales? Come on. So what do you think? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Do some cities and towns along the beautiful Connecticut coastline charge unfairly high beach pass prices if you are a non-resident of that area? Joining us right now is a guest to talk about a story that we had earlier this week that I found fascinating and really is two things. It's a nice thing to see that it's being done. But like I always say, it's sad that we have to do this and we have to find a way. You know, in the same country that put men on the moon in about 7 or 8 years, we put our minds to it and we did it. We really have to find a way to unburden people of medical bills and try as we might to make the whole thing more inexpensive. Quinnipiac University, Dr. Frank Netter, School of Medicine, Clinical Professor of Family Medicine, Dr. Khurram Guman joins us to talk about this situation here. Dr. Guman, hi, it's Paul at WICC. How are you?
Thanks, Paul. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm very good, doctor. Thank you. Talk about this, the effort here by a lot of people to eliminate some of this long-term medical debt and not burden people with a lot of bills that, frankly, a lot of us realize they're probably never going to pay.
Thank you, Paul. I would like to start off by saying thank you to Governor Lamont's administration to address this longstanding challenge of our own citizens having the inability to pay those medical bills and then ending up on these different avenues where they are having hardships. But as you raised, the underlying question that we all have in a wealthy country like our United States, and even in our country, a state like Connecticut, where we have good median income in our state, people are still struggling to pay for their medical bills. And this current round of this debt forgiveness is number four in the series over the past few years. So the real good big question, big picture question is, why aren't our citizens unable to pay their medical bills in the first place? What's driving the cost of care so high? And especially in a state like ours, where there is a lot of the citizens, Connecticut residents, are covered by commercial health insurance plans, and they're still having trouble to meet their financial payments to for the medical care.
It's sad, Dr. Guman, because as I mentioned on the show, we talk a good game with this stuff, but in and if you disagree with me, fine. But I think the core, the core of this, doctor, is the cost. The, everything has a cost. We get it. I understand it. Nobody like yourself wants to work for free. We get it. But I've always said, doctor, I think that until we get a better grip on overall costs and how much those increase every year for a variety of factors, we could stay here for 2 hours talking about this. I don't see us making a big gain on this. I hope I'm wrong, but aren't costs the number one driver here that ends up affecting everyone?
So fair question, fair comment, and I will share a couple thoughts on this. So this current round of debt forgiveness totals to over, I think, $500 million in total since 2024 that has been forgiven. So to your point, you're absolutely right. This $500 million worth of care was provided by either a hospital, a medical office, doctor's office, or somebody has provided some service who is now not getting paid for that service. Now, to your question, to your comment, why is the cost of the care so high in the first place? And that is a fair question, but it's very complicated. It's like, you know, you peel one layer, there's 10 more to peel. Insurance coverage and healthcare access are two different things. And then over the past maybe 20 years, maybe 15 to 20 years, we have seen there's a lot of consolidation within our state, and which is also a part of the national trend, where we have seen only few entities providing the healthcare delivery systems. And also on the other side, there has been mergers and acquisitions between healthcare insurers. So where we maybe had five or six, now we only may have two or three large systems. So some of that cost is driven by the consolidation to some degree. And I think the consumer, which is our Connecticut resident patients here, are a lot of them have health insurance. But sometimes they lack healthcare access. And that is another part of the puzzle, where some of the primary care services, had they received earlier in the course of their disease or illness, the cost may be different.
Yeah.
But since their inability to access care in a timely fashion could result into higher cost care down the road.
Absolutely. If you alert, say, and I'm a type 2 diabetic and I was alerted in 2008 and I made major changes here and my numbers are good, but I remember getting that notification from my doctor, hey, these are your blood sugars. But he said, listen, get a hold of this now, and for the next 10, 20, 30 years, you'll be fine. So there's always that intervention that you mentioned, Dr. Guman, that sadly does not happen, and you see it in a lot of comorbidities, and it's sad.
Absolutely. And sometimes even our patients will not seek medical help just because they're afraid or fearful of those costs related to that care.
Yeah.
For example, you mentioned diabetes. Now, recently you may have heard about there is a new class of medication mm-hmm. that has demonstrated success in weight loss and better outcomes for kidney function,
yeah.
better outcomes for their blood pressure, blood sugar control,
yeah.
better outcomes if some patients have sleep apnea. But a lot of patients, a lot of people, despite the fact having health insurance, cannot afford those
yeah.
medications because they are not covered by their insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's the challenge is not just the cost of the care. I think the other bigger challenge is the insurance coverage is not consistent across the board.
We thank Dr. Khurram Guman, MD, Quinnipiac University, Frank Netter School of Medicine there. He is the Family Medicine Clerkship Director there and Associate Dean for Strategic Partnerships, talking healthcare on a Friday and talking about some people getting some long-term debt through the auspices of Governor Ned Lamont, the state, and a charity eliminated. Doctor, great to have you on. Thank you, and I'm sure we'll talk in the future. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. Dr. Khurram Guman.